Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the Q2 and H1 FY26 earnings conference call of SAMHI Hotels Limited. This conference call may contain forward-looking statements about the company, which are based on the beliefs, opinions, and expectations of the company as on date of this call. These statements are not the guarantees of future performances and involve risks and uncertainties that are difficult to predict. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Mr. Ashish Jakhanwala, Chairman, MD, and CEO of SAMHI Hotels Limited. Thank you, and over to you, sir.
Thank you so much. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to SAMHI Hotels Q2 FY26 earnings call. Thank you for taking out the time to join us today. I'm also joined by our CFO, Rajat Mehra, Head of Investments and EVP, Gyana Das, Nakul, who is SVP of Investments. Our investor relations partner, Strategic Growth Advisors, is also on the call today. We have uploaded our Q2 financial year 2026 financials and investor presentations on the exchanges and on our website, and I hope everyone's had a chance to go through them. This quarter marks an important milestone for SAMHI, one where we have not only delivered another quarter of consistent operating performance but also announced two transformational growth projects that expand our portfolio into new strategic markets. Let me start with a quick overview of the quarter before we move into the specifics. For Q2 FY26, our same-store RevPAR grew by 11.2% year-on-year basis to 5,026 rupees, perfectly in line with the long-term guidance of RevPAR growing between 9%-11% CAGR. Total income for the quarter was 296 crores, up 11% on a year-on-year basis, while EBITDA grew at 110 crores at 14% increase, with margins improving to 37.3%. Profit after tax stood at 99 crores, which includes the reversal of a Navi Mumbai land impairment of 57 crores. Our balance sheet is in its strongest position since listing. Net debt to EBITDA has reduced to 2.9 times. Average interest cost has fallen to 8.5 times, and our credit rating has recently been upgraded to A+ with a stable outlook. In simple terms, our portfolio is delivering strong growth. Our balance sheet is delivered, and we now have ample financial flexibility to fund the next phase of expansion. Now, let me turn to what truly makes this quarter transformational: the growth projects we have announced. We're proud to announce SAMHI's entry into India's financial capital with a landmark dual-branded hotel development in Navi Mumbai, which will redefine both Navi Mumbai's skyline and also SAMHI's future. This project, which is proposed under the Westin and Fairfield brands by Marriott, will be located near the upcoming Navi Mumbai International Airport and D.Y. Patil Stadium at the convergence of major infrastructure such as the Atal Setu and a growing base of commercial and data center developments. We are happy to contribute to the state's commitment to make Navi Mumbai a world-class city. The phase one of this hotel project will comprise around 400 rooms, with the potential to expand to 700 rooms, making this SAMHI's largest hotel by room count. This project is strategic for several reasons. It gives us a first presence in the Mumbai metropolitan region, filling a key gap in our portfolio. This is truly a transformational step that completes our presence across India's five largest office markets: Delhi NCR, Bangalore, Hyderabad, Pune, and now Mumbai. It extends our proven city-centered to new center strategy, similar to what we've executed in Gurgaon, doing good Bangalore, and financial district in Hyderabad. It positions us to benefit from the structural demand shift by large-scale infrastructure and corporate investments in Navi Mumbai. The cost to complete the phase one of this development will be about 650 crores, which includes land approvals and development costs for the initial 400 rooms, thus entailing a cost per key of about 1.65-1.7 crores per key, well below what would be considered replacement cost for similar projects in Mumbai. We estimate this CapEx to be staggered over a period of  3 to 4 years. The second major milestone this quarter is signing of a 260-room mid-scale hotel under a long-term variable lease in Hyderabad Financial District, one of India's fastest-growing office corridors. This is the third property in the precinct alongside the Sheraton and the Fairfield by Marriott. With this addition, SAMHI will now operate across all three points in Hyderabad's most dynamic business district, a unique advantage in a market where Google, Amazon, and several tech majors continue to expand aggressively. The asset will be developed in partnership with the lessor, where the building shell, facade, and high-side services are to be delivered by the developer, and we will only invest in fit-outs post-handover of the building. This structure minimizes upfront capital and shortens the capex to revenue cycle, perfectly aligned with a capital-efficient growth philosophy. Our W Hyderabad and Hitech City, a 170-room luxury development under W Hotel brand, is progressing as planned. Design development is in final stages, building modifications are underway, and mock-up rooms will commence in quarter four of FY26. We are targeting a December 2026 opening, which will be a marquee addition to our portfolio. Once operational, W Hyderabad will elevate our ARR profile and significantly augment same-store growth. Work on the Western Tribute Whitefield Bangalore and other initiatives continue as planned. Across the portfolio, we now have over 1,500 rooms under active development or rebranding, which will take our portfolio to over 6,300 rooms in near future. With this, I'll now hand over to Rajat to take you through the detailed financial performance.
Thank you, Ashish. Good morning, everybody. Building on the top-line summary that Ashish took us through, here are the detailed financial numbers for Q2 FY26. Our total income for the quarter stood at 296 crores, up 11% on a year-on-year basis. Of this, the same-store asset contributed 9% YOY growth. The new openings such as Hyatt Calcutta and Hyatt Greater Noida and Trinity Bangalore added incremental revenue. We also had small loss of income from discontinued assets, primarily the Caspia Delhi sale and the Sheraton commercial office to rooms conversion. The 42 rooms in Sheraton Hyderabad should be operational in December this year and create materially outsized return vis-a-vis the office rentals we were getting prior to the conversion. Consolidated EBITDA stood at 110 crores, a 14% increase on a year-on-year basis. Same-store EBITDA grew at 13.9%, reflecting a strong flow-through on the back of higher rates and stable occupancy. Consolidated EBITDA margins were 37.3% compared to 36.2% last year, a 110 basis point increase on a YOY basis. Depreciation was stable at 30 crores. Finance costs reported at 43 crores, down nearly 12 crores on a year-on-year basis, reflecting the benefit of our deleveraging through the GIC transaction and the sale of Caspia Delhi. On a cash flow basis, our interest expense stood at 35 crores, with the balance being non-cash accounting entries. We had an exceptional one-time gain of approximately 71 crores net of the deferred taxes, largely from the reversal of Navi Mumbai impairment and gain on sale of Caspia Delhi. On the basis of this, I'm happy to report that the company has reported a profit after tax of 100 crores vis-a-vis 13 crores last year. On the balance sheet, our net debt stood at 1,370 crores with a net debt to EBITDA at 2.9x. Adjusted to the capital allocated towards growth projects which are not creating any meaningful EBITDA at present, the net debt to EBITDA stands at 2.4x. The reduction in the interest cost has improved our free cash generation and gives us sufficient capacity to fund the current growth pipeline. With that, I now hand over the mic to Ashish for the closing comments.
Thanks, Rajat. To conclude, before we take the calls, quarter two FY26 represents a clear inflection point for SAMHI. We are delivering consistent operating performance, maintaining financial discipline, and most importantly, executing a transformational growth pipeline that will define SAMHI's next decade. Our entry into Mumbai, expansion in Hyderabad, and progress at W Hyderabad and Western Tribute Bangalore Whitefield together reinforces a strategy of building scale across India's most dynamic office markets. With a stronger balance sheet, upgraded credit rating, robust free cash flows, we are in the best position yet to compound value for our shareholders. Thank you for your time today, and now we'll open the floor for questions.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Saurabh Srivastava from Arista Consulting. Please go ahead.
Hello. Good morning, everybody. Am I audible?
Yes, Saurabh, you are.
Congratulations on a good number. Now, sir, my first question is that though you people have been able to trim down the leverage, but it's still on a higher side, and some projects are coming which are also will be requiring a lot of money. How are you going to manage it? Any monetization is in the pipeline? Or any GIC-like platform is also there?
Saurabh, thank you for your question. So as we, as Rajat articulated, our total net debt to EBITDA is about 2.9 times on an overall basis. We have invested a fair amount of capital in the last 2 years on growth projects, which are not demonstrating commensurate EBITDA. If we were to only take operating assets and the debt on them, it's about 2.4 times. Given all of our debt is between 12 to 14 years, with very little amortization in the first 3 to 5 years, we feel that a debt to EBITDA level of anywhere between 2 to 2.5 times is very, very stable and healthy. As I said, our operating business has already reached that level. In terms of funding the capital expenditure, we had articulated in our capital markets presentation, which is also uploaded, and actually even in the investor presentation yesterday, that given the current run rate of revenues and EBITDA, we actually expect to see about 1,700 crores of investable surplus in the business. And whether it's Navi Mumbai or the Hyderabad project, these are nothing but the means for us to deploy that investable surplus. So we do not expect our balance sheet to be put under duress because of the capital expenditure. It's largely being funded from operating free cash. Can we move to second question?
The next question is from the line of Prashant Biyani. Please go
ahead. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, while in Q2 we have seen occupancy declining due to travel restrictions, how do you see the organic travel demand as per your SAMI Intel software?
So Prashant, thanks so much. So quarter one and quarter two, and you know, as a management team, we hate citing events, right? I mean, whether it was India-Pakistan or anything, but nevertheless, the first half of the year had a lot happening for the sector. First, the India-Pakistan issue, then we had the Ahmedabad crash, and then we had some of the worst monsoons across the country. I think it did have some dampening effect. What we've seen, Prashant, starting September, that any week that is clear of any event has seen a very strong revenue run rate. So with that, as businesses come back post-Diwali, till, of course, till the end of the year, we do expect to maintain a significantly higher growth momentum than what we have seen in H1. So in summary, we expect the H2 to remain significantly ahead in terms of RevPAR, in terms of occupancies, in terms of total revenue than what we have seen for H1. And Prashant, I'll take back our conversations to demand and supply, right? We have not yet seen any meaningful supply opening in Hyderabad. We have not seen any meaningful supply open up in Bangalore. We've not seen any meaningful supply open up in Delhi or in Pune, whereas demand continues to grow. So the events sometimes play a dampening effect, but if you were to look at the structural story of demand continuing to grow and supply just not coming, we remain fairly committed and convinced about the guidance we've been giving, that total revenue growth for same-store hotels will maintain 9 to 11% CAGR for the next 3 to 5 years.
Right. And in particular for our mid-scale segment, we saw ADR sharply grew, but occupancy dipped. Is there any hotel-specific factor, or this is a general ADR strategy for the segment that we are following?
So, Prashant, what's happening is, and even in the mid-scale, there are two segments for us, right? The Holiday Inn Express platform, which is mid-scale, and the Fairfield and Four Points, they're upper mid-scale. In the upper mid-scale, we saw a fabulous rate growth in some of the markets like Bangalore, where the ARRs almost have grown, mid-teens to high-teens, actually. And therefore, clearly, we are juicing out the opportunity in terms of rate. In the Holiday Inn Express, the mid-scale space, the rates have grown. The occupancies have actually kind of declined slightly, largely because last year we had some group movements which were not repeated this year. So nothing to worry. It was effectively an incident that happened last year which had given us a boost of occupancies. This year we expect them to be more natural. But the good news is the rates continue to grow.
Right. And So for the Mumbai asset or the transaction that we did in Mumbai and for the new Hyderabad property, both these would come in the platform or under SAMHI standalone? And just one question connected to it, the new Hyderabad hotel, we would be operationalizing by when?
So first question, both these assets are with SAMHI. They're not part of the GIC platform. So both these hotels will be with SAMHI or its 100% subsidiary. So that's number one. Number two, in terms of One Financial District Hyderabad, we expect this hotel to take about 36 months to 42 months for it to be operational.
Okay. Right. And so for Trinity renovation, we would start by when?
Prashant, interestingly, we have made a small investment of about 8 crores in Trinity in the beginning of the year, fiscal year. And we've already seen the rate profile change substantially in that hotel. We will make staggered investments in this asset. I think the next round of investment will happen in the summers, let's say post-February and March. Should be around 20 crores, 25 crores. With that, we actually are fairly confident that Trinity will reach its underwritten expectation. So we thought that originally we have to invest about 70, 80 crores to get this hotel to be at circa 10,000 rupees average rate. We had bought it at an average rate of about 5,000 rupees. We actually think that we would invest about 25, 30 crores and not the 70 to 80 crores to get to that intended average rate. I think Trinity is, as with ACIC, Prashant, the Trinity conversion is happening better than we had anticipated and underwritten. So we do expect FY 2027 to be a great year for Trinity, even though we would have not really fully renovated the hotel by then, you know.
And so just lastly, sir, our expertise lies in acquiring stressed asset and turning it around. How do you plan to replicate that expertise when you are building the Mumbai Twin Towers ground up?
Prashant, interestingly, Mumbai came as a part of an acquisition because this was ACIC acquisition. And our excitement is that our underlying land cost, while book value was 71 odd crores, our actual cost that we paid for the piece of land was like 26 crores, right? So when you start a development in a market like Mumbai with an underlying land cost of 26 crores, we remain pretty excited that this is going to be a mid-teen ROCEs investment for us. Let's make no mistake, we've done developments in the past like Courtyard Fairfield Bangalore, which, as you know, have turned out to be extremely successful for us. So our specialty lies in dual-branded hotels. You know, we've done that in Courtyard Fairfield Bangalore. We think repeating that to the Westin and Fairfield in a market like Navi Mumbai will be very exciting. So we have all the skill sets of development. We have all the skill sets of choosing the brand partner of asset management. And as I said, in the end, Navi Mumbai is a gift through an acquisition. Would we have bought a piece of land in Navi Mumbai for 80, 90 crores? The answer is no.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Prashant.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Jinesh Joshi from PL Capital. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Sir, I just wanted to understand the timing issue in relationship to recognizing this reversal of impairment on the Navi Mumbai property. I guess we got an approval from MIDC day before yesterday, but the reversal impact is shown in 2Q results. So just wanted to get a sense of how the recognition timelines ideally work over here.
Hi, Jinesh. Jinesh, from an accounting perspective, if there is an event which was actually existing at the end of the quarter and post the quarter end and before the, you know, approval of the results in the board meeting and there is further development, then we are necessarily required to actually take the impact in the quarter, you know, which is to be approved by the board. So we got the final document from MIDC actually before the board meeting. And as per the accounting regulation, we had no choice but to actually recognize this reversal in the Q2 financials itself.
Understood. And sir, if I heard you right, you mentioned that both the Navi Mumbai and the Hyderabad property will be in our standalone SAMHI business, so to say. Now, given how the CapEx is lined up over here, I think for Navi Mumbai, you mentioned about 650 crores and for Hyderabad, it is about 125 crores. This is over and above what we had already committed with respect to our other two properties in Bangalore and the second one in Hyderabad. So just wanted to get a sense, I mean, while this was being asked earlier, I mean, our net debt at about 1370 crores, given additional capex of about 750 to 800 crores that is lined up, are we going to see some kind of increase in debt levels come through from our side?
So, Jinesh, I'll reiterate that we, even in before Navi Mumbai confirmation, we had presented a whole plan to our shareholders and investors, which highlighted that the company is now producing a reasonable amount of free cash on an annualized basis. Both these projects are slightly longer lead than honestly we would have liked them to be. Therefore, if you look at Navi Mumbai, 650 crores, that's spread over a four-year period. If you were to look at Hyderabad, which will be spread over a period of about, let's say, three and a half years or so. And, you know, that gives us reasonable time. And as you know, in a development project, the first few years are not really that capital intensive because you're taking approvals, you know, you're doing the building shell and then comes the engineering and the fit outs. In terms of leverage, you know, we are currently, let's say, at circa 3 times. Our intended guidance was to go to 2.5 times. You know, we had accelerated that path because of GIC. We think we will not breach the circa 3 times in the short term, and we will get to 2.5 times in the midterm, right? So we don't, we're not worried about leverage levels being higher than where we are or where we thought they would be a comfortable place for us to stabilize. And that's largely because of the free cash, which is funding, and some of the other capital expenditure, Jinesh, that we have, especially for the earlier Bangalore acquisition, you know, for the first 18 months, it's going to be funded through GIC infusion. So we're actually preserving our capital, and that's pretty substantial. That's about 150 crores or so, right? So, yeah, I think in terms of leverage, we remain fairly comfortable that the circa 3 times is what we'll maintain in the short term, in spite of the commitments we'll have to make to Navi Mumbai and Hyderabad. And in the long term or in the medium term, we'll be getting to about 2.5 times plus minus. Just for your clarification, Hyderabad is a leased asset, and therefore we have no investment in land, building, and engineering equipment. So the overall project will be delivered at about 45, 50 lakhs per key, even though it's a 260-room hotel in part of high-tech city. But the structure of the investment there allows us it to be extremely capital efficient, and more so the fact that for the first 1 year from today, we have to make zero investments there.
Understood. Sir, one last question from my side. Just wanted to understand the MIDC deal, because over here, I think the land is on lease. So what lease rentals will we be paying? And given the fact that land is on lease, this 650 crore capex number for 400 rooms appears to be slightly on the higher side. So if you can just clarify that bit.
So there is no per se lease rent. These are typical MMRDA, MIDC leases which are given for 80, 90 years. And there's a premium to be paid upfront, and there is no lease rent to be paid on a regular basis. The premium that we have to pay has been included in the project cost that we have mentioned to you. So when you're talking about 650 crores for 400 rooms, it actually includes, first of all, it includes the, you know, the premium we have to pay for the extension of 5 years. Two, it actually includes the premium we're going to pay for FSI for the entire 700 rooms. So when you divide 650 by 400, it's slightly, you know, top-loading the cost. What we would encourage is you take 1,000 crores total investment over a long-term period, and the total investment there will be approximately 1,000 crores or 700 rooms for 1,000 crores, right? So that, if you see cost per key, including the premiums for extra FSI and extension, we feel it's actually pretty reasonable for a market like Mumbai. But for the first 400 rooms, we're adding the premium for the entire 700 rooms to be paid to MIDC.
What is the premium amount? Can you quantify?
About 150. But the premium amount to be paid to MIDC?
Yes.
Oh, so listen, this broken up into two parts. The first part is really the extension premium, and the second part is really the FSI premium. The extension premium is in the range of about 75 to 80 crores. And the extra FSI really depends, Jinesh, on how much FSI we're going to eventually consume. This is connected to the ready reckoner of the area. But we have right now in our estimates assumed about 100 to 150 crores for the premium to be paid for extra FSI.
Understood, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jinesh.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Pratik Oza from Systematics. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, I guess our occupancy across our three segments is tightly clustered between 74 to 76%, which in my sense, it shows that our assets are running at a near peak efficiency. So as you execute a strategy to shift the revenue mix to 60% upscale, where do you see primary RevPAR lever going from here? And is there any meaningful occupancy gain left, or will it be through an increase in ARR?
So Pratik, first of all, you're right. The investments we've made in the last 2 years and the recent Navi Mumbai development, our share of upscale is inevitably going to go to 60% from the current 44%, right? Of course, the upscale does operate at a total revenue per key, which is 2x of the portfolio average. So in terms of the inventory addition and its impact on revenue would be very, very substantial. So that's good that the efforts that we've made in the last 2 years would create a meaningful impact on the revenue profile of the company. And as I said, we love all the segments, but more than that, we actually love SIPs markets, you know. So tomorrow, if we were to get an opportunity to acquire or convert something into a Holiday Inn Express in Navi Mumbai, we would still do that because we love that market and it's not the segment play. In terms of occupancies and how much headroom occupancies have, see, on the current state, we think an occupancy level which is between 75 and 80%. Is where business hotels would stabilize. We unfortunately as of today do not see a lot of urban leisure in India, which means like Singapore or London, we're not seeing a huge volumes of people traveling to cities for leisure, which would have otherwise given us, you know, occupancy levels during long weekends, holidays, and so on and so forth. So we continue to see that those dips during the year, and therefore year-round occupancies for business hotels, I would be comfortable guiding anywhere between 75 and 80%, and that's really the headroom. In the long term, I do believe that with the growth of disposable income, better air infrastructure, the growth of social infrastructure in India, you know, rock concerts, IPL matches, and so on and so forth, I think there is a huge latent opportunity for hotels in the big cities. And as and when that opportunity starts playing out, you would see occupancy levels go to 85% or so. Don't forget, we are sold out Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So when we start backfilling the holidays and the weekends, the opportunity is phenomenal, but I really can't put my finger to when will that happen. It's really a structural shift. Therefore, when we guide towards 9 to 11% same-store growth, we believe majority of that will actually come from the repricing. And we have seen repricing playing out really well. One would be worried if, you know, we've hit a peak. I don't think so. Markets like Hyderabad, Pune, Gurgaon continue to operate at a significant lower pricing levels than even a market like Bangalore, right? So actually, we think there is a reasonable headroom for average rates to grow in several markets that we operate in. And combination of the two would deliver us that between 9 and 11% total revenue CAGR. Of over a 3 to 5 year period for same set of hotels. Of course, we have hotels in our portfolio which are due for rebranding, renovation, and those hotels would bring the above average performance in terms of total revenue growth and setting the company, I think, on a path of a 17-18% CAGR for the next 3 to 5 years. We've not recomputed that with Navi Mumbai, but, you know, even before Navi Mumbai, we thought we should be able to get that over a 3 to 5 year period.
Yeah, so that's helpful. So second question is on your just two new developments. One is your massive 700 greenfield development in Navi Mumbai, And the second is on the 260-room long-term lease, variable lease model in Hyderabad. So going ahead, how should we see these two models? I mean, when you enter into a new market, will it be a mix of these two models, or will we be going more towards the lease model?
So I'll reiterate, Prateek, that Navi Mumbai was an outcome of an acquisition that we had made. On our own, are we looking for pieces of land to build hotels? The answer is a flat no. We are not looking to buy pieces of land to build hotels. That is not our business model. Obviously, sometimes we acquire portfolios which bring land parcels. So to be very clear, no, we are not looking for active land acquisition for hotel development. That process is way too long. And also you end up paying market prices for land in India. So therefore your total cost becomes either at or at premium to replacement cost, another business that we are not interested to run. So that leaves us with sticking to two set of opportunities for ourselves. One is really the classical M&A like the Trinity in Bangalore, where we find an undermanaged, underperforming hotel and we can acquire that to reposition that hotel. And two, we are actually, I must tell you, we are really surprised about the success we are getting in securing long-term leases. 2 years back when we articulated this and we said about 13% of our revenues come from long-term variable leases, we expect that to go to 20% to 25%. We had our work cut out for ourselves, because convincing people to give their properties for 50 to 60 years, no guarantees, only a percentage of revenue, for them to invest their capital in land building and equipment, it doesn't seem like an easy task, right? But I think our reputation and what we've delivered so far in that space is making us build a really strong pipeline of variable leases. And I can tell today, if I look at my future pipeline, a large part of our actionable pipeline is actually variable leases, which is good news for the company, because the cost per key in a variable lease is at a substantial lower level to what it would be for a freehold, right? So yeah, I think the future continues to be about M&A, and the future continues to be about securing long-term variable leases. Acquiring land for development is not part of our business plan.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much, and all the best for the upcoming projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Prateek.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Samarth Agarwal from Ambit Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for this opportunity and congratulations on a great quarter. Just a couple of clarifications. In the result note, it's written that company has received a letter from MIDC confirming the extension of development period. So would it be correct to assume that there's no caveats to the land and Sami is free to basically develop and own the asset for as long as they can?
That's right, Samant. Otherwise, we would have not taken the call to recognize the reversal of impairment. So there are no caveats. We have been given an extension of up to 5 years to complete the project, and we are taking the steps that are required to give effect to that, really.
Understood. And in slide 11 of the presentation, you've given a list of the key commercial micro markets, basically the ones you're looking at. So some of them you are present in and some of them perhaps you are looking at. So going forward, will the growth strategy be to more towards solidifying presence in the micro markets you are present in, or perhaps extend it to these markets you have mentioned in the presentation?
So Samad, this slide 11 is really critical, because what it tells you is that we can maintain a very strict market discipline and yet not compromise on growth opportunities. So we've always maintained that we've taken, our investments have been guided by growth of office and aviation markets, and the cities and the micro markets you see on the table, and there will be more beyond that, but this is more illustrative. Are where we feel that the bulk of the office space and aviation markets tend to, influence. We would like to see over a long term all the white boxes have a hotel from us, but this is a game of patience. Because as I said, if we were a builder of hotels, we would have just gone and bought land and built hotels in all of those spaces. That's not what we do. So in several markets, we will wait others to build. We will wait for the right market cycle or asset cycle to produce an opportunity for ourselves. and that's when we think we can make our presence there. I mean, I'll give an example. North Bangalore, we have all blanks, right? Because right now it's a market driven by greenfield developments, and we'd like to stay away from that till such time that market evolves and develops. And we're fairly confident over a period of time we'll find either a market opportunity or an asset opportunity to give us an entry into that market, right? So I think this is the whiteboard of opportunities for us. It keeps us very disciplined on not taking a risk on demand, and it puts the team's focus razor sharp on where we think the returns are in the future. So this is pretty much the football field for SAMHI to look at M&A and leases.
Understood, very clear. And just a second question on the pipeline. So most of the partnerships for the upcoming hotels are different brands of Marriott only. So I understand the history and the relationship that the team has with the Marriott team. But is there any specific reason why it's mostly limited to Marriott and not perhaps any other brand or no?
Pratik, Samarth, it's not my job to market Marriott on a call like this. Because if I give you all the reasons it will look like as if I'm marketing Marriott here. I think we have respect for all operators. We remain open for business with all operators. We have a huge relationship with Marriott. We have a shared services center. We operate with them in Bangalore. So every time a hotel gets added to that network, we obviously get economies of scale. But they clearly run one of the most enviable loyalty programs in the world, which is Bonvoy. They have a very large presence in India. We have seen their hotels perform at or above our expectation. So I think we have the path of least resistance to Marriott, if I may say so. We do keep our eyes and ears open for other opportunities and other operators, and I'm sure we will expand our relationships. But as an investor, Samarth, we've been taught to follow the path of least resistance to returns, right, and not get too creative. So we are following that path of least resistance, and the other path has some resistance which the counterparties have to remove, and we'll obviously evaluate it as when it comes. But yeah, the Hyderabad, we've not yet disclosed the operator, but yeah, Navi Mumbai, we have an MOU with Marriott signed for Westin and Fairfield. The W in Hyderabad is obviously a Marriott brand. The Westin Tribute is also Marriott, but Hyderabad, one financial district, I'll repeat, we remain open for business.
Very clear, sir. That's all I wanted to ask. Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Vikas Ahuja from Antique. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. My first question is, could you provide some more color on 11% RevPAR growth which we have reported, especially, you know, which markets contributed to most of this strength, example, Hyderabad versus Bangalore versus other. Also, on expansion, you know, the Hyderabad addition, it's pretty clear that, the, you know, that city continues to report one of the best ADRs. For this Navi Mumbai, could you clarify whether the decision was primarily driven by proximity to the upcoming international airport, or whether, you know, it's a targeted expansion to broader the presence in region like Mumbai, because we were not there.
So Vikas, thank you. So for Navi Mumbai, let me be honest, this land came as a part of the ACIC acquisition. So we can't claim, you know, brilliance about selecting this piece of land. Having said that, we've kind of worked hard with the administration to retain this site, and that effort was for a reason, you know. And I think it's not just the... So what I would request is if you see the slide number, you know, the slide numbers, seven and eight. One of the big themes we have seen Vikas play out in India over the last 15 years is shift of economic activity from traditional city centers to newer business districts. And we saw that how 20 years back, North Place, Nehru Place was the epicenter of office activity in NCR. And today, actually, it's Gurgaon and Noida to some extent. If you were to talk about 15 years back, 20 years back, you know, when I was in Accor, the whole focus was finding an opportunity in Hyderabad city center, today you would not even talk about that and you'll focus about opportunities in high-tech city, Gachibowli, financial district. Same thing has happened to Bangalore. Today we are able to sell a Courtyard by Marriott at a premium on Outer Ring Road to a premium to sometimes JW by Marriott in Bangalore city center, right? What we have seen is that given how Indian urban environment operates, which is very limiting, the newer areas tend to benefit the most because of better infrastructure, critical mass, and of course the entry price for large corporates. We think this shift in Mumbai to Navi Mumbai was planned for almost 50 years, right? You know, it couldn't happen because of lack of infrastructure. And kudos to the new government that they have resolved the infrastructure in the matter of the last 5-6 years. So today for you to go from South Bombay or Central Bombay to Navi Mumbai using Atal Setu is kind of without any friction. Add to that the fact that Navi Mumbai Airport is 110 million passengers planned. Current airport is at about 45-50. Delhi is already touching 75-80. And there's no reason why Navi Mumbai Airport will not start getting filled up before we all know. So if you look at the way the economic activity will shift from, not necessarily from, the new economic activity will concentrate itself in the island. Mumbai will remain to be what Mumbai is. But I think it's not just the airport. You have Seawood Grand Central by L&T. You have Mindspace in Junanagar. You have the Dhirubhai Ambani Knowledge City. You have the Reliance Corporate Park in Ghansoli. You have the data center developments by Prestige, Adani, Connex, Repwork, SIFI, etc. You have industrial demand from Turbay and Mahapay. You have the CITCO Exhibition Convention Center, the D.Y. Patil Stadium. I mean, there's so much happening in Navi Mumbai. And our site sits right in the center of all of this. So south of our site is airport, north of our site is would be Mindspace, the Dhirubhai Ambani Knowledge City. On east of our site will be the whole data center development, right? So I think as economies tend to grow, which is more focused on technology, AI, you know, you would see Navi Mumbai benefiting a lot because all that data center tech development is more favorable in Navi Mumbai given the land cost rentals than it would be in the island. So I actually think our call to make a large 700-room investment, that is considered basis both the pace and the density of development that we will see in Navi Mumbai from now over the next 10 years. I often tell people that Courtyard Fairfield Bangalore created SAMI 1.0. You know, it was a 330-room development which we undertook in Outer Ring Road, Bangalore, not Bangalore City Center. Today, that Courtyard runs highest average rate for many merit hotels in the country. We're crossing almost 200 crores top line, 100 crores EBITDA on that asset. I think Navi Mumbai is the start of SAMI 2.0. The 700-room hotel will redefine how SAMI would be over the next decade, just as Navi Mumbai will redefine Mumbai's place. Today, Bangalore absorbed 7 million square feet of office space in the last 6 months, right? And Mumbai was less than that. There is no reason over the next 4 or 5 years, Mumbai, supported by Navi Mumbai, will not catch up to office space absorption as equivalent to Bangalore, right? So I think our excitement emanates from urban planning trends, and they're very long-term and structural in nature. And that's why I said our programming for 700 rooms, I will repeat, the site came as a gift in the ACIC acquisition. We have very little underlying land cost, and therefore our ability to take a bold call is easier because we have to solve for return on construction cost, which as you would know, Vikas, is much easier than if we had to take a call on return on construction plus market land cost in Navi Mumbai today. That would have been a hard call. In terms of RevPAR contribution by cities, actually what we've seen is Hyderabad, Bangalore have grown really well. Pune has seen a pretty good uptake, but that's largely because our high-frequency Pune has really outperformed. But generally that 9 to 11% is spread evenly across cities, because as I can see it.
Sure, this is very useful. I have one more follow-up. So if we talk about, you know, the overall rates, so if you can give us some maybe color on how rates are shaping up in October. Have we seen momentum picked up meaningfully, especially in the first part before Diwali? And how you are viewing November, given that relatively it's a clean month with no major festivals, especially compared to last year when Diwali fell in November? This is my last question. Thank you.
So because what we've seen was that from 10th September or 15th September till pretty much the week before Diwali, we saw fabulous business coming across the portfolio. We had some record daily run rate numbers show up on our dashboard. And I think that more than any guidance on November gives us the confidence that the need for business travel continues to be very strong. Of course, October this year we had the Dussehra and midweek Diwali, so wasn't necessarily didn't show the right numbers, but you're absolutely right. The expectation was that from this week onwards, till pretty much a week before Christmas New Year, or let's say 10 days before Christmas New Year, we should see pretty good numbers. So I think business on books, space, clicks on websites, all of those trends continue to be fairly robust for the current quarter, and also for actually quarter four, which Vikas is the best quarter, because quarter four sees, both quarter three and quarter four sees the same run rate for a normal day. It's just that quarter three has many less normal days because of holidays compared to quarter four. So for us, the most fun quarter is actually quarter four, from 10th, 15th January till 31st March. But even November and the early parts of December show pretty good signs.
No, this is very useful. And I think after quarter four, we have, I think, this strong expectation of Q1 also, because 1 year there was election and then there was war, so there's a lot of pent-up. So I understand. Thanks a lot, and best of luck for the next quarter. Thank you.
Thank you, Vikas.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Yashovardhan Agrawal from IIFL Capital Services Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi, team. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on good sets of number. So, a couple of questions from my side. So, could you please clarify the reason for tax outflow in the quarter? And on the finance cost, in the PPT, we have mentioned that the annual run rate is around 121 crore of the interest cost. But in this quarter, it was more than 40 crores. So, reason for the same? Why wasn't it around 30-35 crore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yash, first of all, on the tax, you know, what you see in the P&L is actually only creation of deferred tax. There is no tax outflow that SAMHI has. On the cash flow side, when you see the tax which is there, is predominantly the TDS which the customer actually deducts while they are actually making the payment to us. So there is no tax outflow which is there in SAMHI. The only tax outflow that you see or tax expense that you see in the P&L is the creation of deferred tax. It's a non-cash
entry. Okay. And we don't expect to pay tax in the future quarters as well, right?
No, we don't
expect to pay tax
in the near future.
No, so you're right, Yash. We had reasonable tax shields available across entities. You would also, so we don't expect any cash payouts from the company,
at least
for the next
few years.
Yeah, few years. On the interest, and Rajat will chime in, but you know, we did clarify that the actual cash interest expense was about 35 crores, in line with what we were saying. What we have done is that we have refinanced, or we are in the process of refinancing a large facility where the interest rates will go down from existing 8.4 to about 7.9. And on account of that, what we had done was there was a certain upfront payment made at the beginning of the loan, which was amortized over a over full tenure. Because we want to refinance that, we have kind of accelerated that write-off. And that's again non-cash. So that 3 crore expense is adding to the finance cost. But again, it's non-cash. And on top of that, it helps us reduce financing costs from current 8.4 to about 7.9% in that particular portfolio. Should be done by the end of the year, actually.
Yeah, that's close to about 350 crores out of the total debt that we have, which is getting refinanced.
Correct. So, Yash, with that, you will actually see the overall blended interest cost prices coming down for the complex.
Yes. Which is not incorporated in the 8.5% that has been reported right now.
Correct.
Got it, sir. This is helpful. So my another question is on the Navi Mumbai project that we are planning. So in the initial remarks, you mentioned that GIC is not part of this project. Even though we are planning to have some rooms in the upper upscale segment as well, so what is the reason for it?
The key reason, Yash, is that we have that understanding for future projects. There are existing upscale hotels like Sheraton in Hyderabad or Hyatt Place in Gurgaon or Renaissance Ahmedabad, which are not part of the GIC joint venture. This asset was a pre-existing asset at the time of the joint venture and therefore was not part of the JV. When we say that future assets is about the future upscale assets may be considered in the JV. It's not a hard and fast rule, but of course, we will take it to the JV. This asset is not part of the JV. Also, from a purely selfish perspective, we feel that the value creation in this asset is phenomenal. You know, if we were to take the market performance of Comsec and the competitive set today in Navi Mumbai is at an average rate of about 11,500 rupees, and of course, the Westin will be at premium to all of that. We think even if we take some blended performance for the current year, this on a full 700-room hotel is about 180 crores, 185 crores of EBITDA potential. I think our job and our excitement is to execute and deliver that. If at all we need to do some capital recycling, it will be only after we have created the value in the asset, you know. As of today, it remains part of SAMHI, and we remain committed to delivering that number from this asset.
Okay. 180 crores figure that you gave is for the 700 rooms, right? Not 400.
That is right. That is right, Jinesh.
Got it, sir. Sir, another question on the same. If you look at the market currently, there are around only 1,500 rooms, and even in that, 1,500 rooms are announced and majority of that in the midscale segment. Sir, why are we still inclined towards adding more inventory in the midscale and not towards upper upscale segment, considering that we already have land and the return profile in upper upscale segment is better?
Yash, to give you some context, and we have experience of dual-branded hotels. We have the Courtyard in Fairfield in Bangalore, where the Courtyard sells at an average rate of about 22,000-23,000 rupees for the year. The Fairfield would be selling at about 12,500-13,000 rupees per year. What we've seen is when you do large-scale hotel developments, and if it's a single-branded hotel, you still need a lot of what is called quote-unquote base business. The base business comes at a discount to what your targeted rates are. When you do a dual-branded hotel, invariably a lot of your base business goes into a lower category hotel for which it is built. In terms of capital expenditure, in terms of operating expenses, you know, you've built it to operate at lower rate, and therefore the bulk of your base business can be redirected towards that, leaving the upscale hotel to be fully leveraged for the high-priced business. Therefore, no surprise, Yash, that nobody would have heard of a Courtyard by Marriott in India operating at an average rate of 22,000 rupees, right? That is possible in Bangalore because we have 170 rooms of Courtyard, about 170 rooms, 165 of Fairfield, and therefore a lot of relatively low rate, and even that low rate is 13,000 rupees there, you know, tends to go into Fairfield. I think in terms of managing your CapEx, leveraging the market opportunity, we think the dual-branded hotels present a very unique opportunity. You know, as the saying says, "What ain't broke, don't try and fix it." The dual-branded hotels have worked really well for us in Bangalore, and therefore we think repeating that in Mumbai is intelligent. We have debated and deliberated this enough with the operator as well. It is not just our and our board's point of view. The same point of view has also been revalidated by an operator of Marriott stature, where they also feel that dual branding will help us get the highest yield from the asset. The highest rate will come from a single-branded hotel because obviously the Fairfield will operate at a discounted average rate, but we're not chasing rate or RevPAR, we are chasing return on capital employed. I can assure you that the highest return on capital employed will come from a dual-branded hotel in that location.
Got it, sir. Got it. That's it from my side. Thank you and good luck.
Thank you, Yash.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Murtuza Arsiwalla from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Hi, Ashish. Congratulations on getting that extension in Navi Mumbai. Just a question, you know, something that I've been debating in my head as well. When I look at your revenue mix, you know, obviously the upscale seems to have a higher revenue contribution relative to the number of seats. If I were to think, you know, managing bandwidth in terms of building hotels, would you be better off building more upscale than mid-scale just because, you know, it would almost require the same amount of management bandwidth, assuming return on capital employed margins, etc., would be similar in both categories? But, you know, and I can see incrementally your portfolio sort of leaning towards upscale. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Murtaza, that thought crosses our mind more than often. But, you know, we have a job. We are in a capital-intensive business. So risk and reward are things we need to look at both at the same time, you know. The upscale assets tend to have capital concentration, Murtaza. And we've seen markets go through unexpected surprises, right? And our job here is to make sure that we do not create a concentrated pool of capital in an asset or in a market. So we are pretty dispersed across all office markets today, right?
Yeah.
I think there is more effort in mid-scale for sure, but we've also seen that over a very long period of time, the mid-scale tends to give you a more measured returns vis-a-vis the risk. So yeah, when things are going really well, you can see a lot of excitement in the upscale because the revenues are covering up for both the capex and the opex. But in cycles where revenues tend to get slightly tight, we've seen the mid-scale, because of the lower capital intensity both in capex and in opex, tend to hold their head you know, more firmer than upscale sometimes, right? So you're absolutely right. You know, our, you know, obviously you do one large hotel and you get 200 crores of EBITDA or 150 crores of EBITDA. But the fact is that you are also taking the risk on a single asset or on a single market. You know, Murtaza, we did see unfortunate incidents like, you know, bad monsoons or terror attacks or economic activities because of certain things shifting. And as much as we are excited about today, we need to remain very, very cautious for the long term. I think mid-scale tends to produce insane amount of ROCEs if you do it right. So for instance, I will repeat that even today in our portfolio, the highest ROCE asset continues to be a Holiday Inn Express in Hi-Tech City, Hyderabad. Well, two reasons. A, it's mid-scale. Three reasons. A, it's mid-scale, so very low capital. Two, it was leased, so therefore we never paid for land and building. Three, it's Hi-Tech City, Hyderabad. And Nakul can correct my number, but I think the ROCEs would be 45%, right? And when you see 45% ROCEs in an asset-heavy business, you tend to salivate and you're okay to make some extra efforts to get there. Look at the Fairfield and Bangalore Outer Ring Road, Murtaza, right? To be able to sell a Fairfield at 14,000 rupees, right? You can well imagine the ROCEs that asset is producing vis-a-vis if I had done a smaller upscale asset selling at 18,000 rupees, right? Or 19,000 rupees. So I think very similar to a fund manager, you know, we sometimes have to, you know, take bets which are not lazy and easy, but that's the only way to create outsized returns for our shareholders.
Would it be possible, you know, if we were to think of it, we have the revenue mix across the various categories and some sort of indication on at a portfolio level, not at individual assets, but when you think of the entire portfolio, break it down between, you know, like you have mid-scale, upscale, upper mid-scale, what would be the ROCEs, you know, for the current year? Like any indications, any number crunching that you would have done?
So Murtaza, if you were to take upscale as one and the broader mid-scale as one, right, and not get to about lower mid-scale and upper mid-scale, if you were to take upscale separately and mid-scale separately, I would, and you know, we can come back to you, but I think the numbers would be fairly comparable. And again, as I said, it's very micro-market driven. And I think Murtaza, I'll also take you back to slide 11. You know, what is really important for us is to be in Hi-Tech City across three price points. It is important for us to be in Navi Mumbai across three price points. It is important for us to be in Outer Ring Road across three price points and so on and so forth, right? So rather than doing another hotel, let's say in Mysore or in Varanasi or in Lucknow, and with all due respect to those markets, right, we think, we feel very, very comfortable with Tier 1. we think the equation of demand and supply is far more visible and predictable in tier one. And therefore, if SAMHI has to grow over the next 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, right, we are giving ourselves optionality to grow without compromising on the locations. And Conrad Hilton taught this to us 100 years back. The only three things important in this sector is location, location, and location. So I would not compromise on location. I would rather put three price points in the same location. Then be forced to go to a suboptimal location because I cannot do multiple price points. So I also think that operating across price points, Murtaza, ensures the management team, the board, and the shareholders that this company will have a runway to grow for the next decade or two and not just run out of opportunities after doing five upscale hotels and then be forced to buy land and build hotels. And, you know, that's a task which is good for some, definitely not good for us, right? So gives us optionality, maintains a ROCE, allows us to dominate markets across all price points, which has its own advantages. So I think there is a lot of merit in pursuing a multi-price point strategy, but not compromise on the location.
If I may just chip in, given that you did direct us to slide 11, should I think of the blank spaces as your future opportunities across price points and locations?
Absolutely, yes, Murtaza. But if wishes were horses, you know, as they say, getting something in Delhi, you know, we need to be careful, especially given the rules we put on ourselves, which is not above replacement cost. But the answer is absolutely yes. This is a football field, Murtaza. This is where we would like to take our capital. There are times we've waited for years to get into a micro market because A, we need that micro market and we need that micro market at discount to replacement cost, right? So we know where we need to be. As they say, you know, luck is about being at the right place at the right time. The place we know, the time will come and we'll get lucky.
Good luck with that, Ashish. Thank you.
Thank you, Murtaza.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Viraj Mahadevia from MoneyGrow. Please go ahead.
Hi, congratulations to the management team on the direction of travel in the business. Quick question regarding the Courtyard by Marriott in Pune, which is a conversion from Four Points. When do you expect to see that up and running as a property? Is it early FY27?
So, Viraj, the property is already operational, fully operational. We actually continuing to see pretty good YOY growth in that property because earlier it was franchised and now it is managed by Marriott. And I think FY27 will be a great year. We expect to start renovating that hotel from March, April. And like all of our renovations, we typically don't do any shutdowns. We do it on a wing-wise basis, staggered manner. So I think our current guidance is that by end of FY27, we should have renovated that hotel in phases and be ready for it to be a courtyard.
Understood. Also, the point you mentioned on refinancing of your debt, would you say that the interest cost could come down to sub 8% starting FY27 onwards? Is that possible for your entire debt stack?
So, basis the current benchmarks, and Viraj, you know, interest rates are highly dependent on the benchmarks. If you were to freeze the benchmarks where they are today, I think very possible that our overall financing cost will come sub 8% in FY27, largely because a large debt that we have, we can only refinance it in May, right? Before that, we have some refinancing costs. But FY27, clearly our target is to bring the total weighted average cost of financing below.
As per the plan 8%. That we have, it's reaching to 8% by FY27 with the current
benchmarks. See, the latest refinancing that we've done, Viraj, is actually at 7.9%. And also, let me clarify how we get to 7.9. The actual coupon is going to be 7.55. There is a 1% upfront, but instead of amortizing it over a 12-year period, which is the tenure of the loan, we're actually deciding to amortize it over a 3-year period, right? Because as you've seen in the Citibank case, you know, once you refinance, you have to take that into your P&L. And we think that the credit rating of the company will keep improving every year. So we should not bind ourselves to certain interest rate benchmarks for the long term. So what we're doing is we're taking an accelerated accounting for the upfront. And that's how it actually gets to 7.9%, right? Otherwise, the coupon will be actually 7.55%. And
our cash outflow.
Yeah, we actually think that therefore 7.98 is what we will now push hard for. We are only at A plus. We think that if we continue to deliver these sets of numbers, we should keep doing better on our rating.
Yeah.
So that's really the expectation here.
Fantastic. And if the RBI were to cut rates, obviously you would have that as additional benefit, right, on the benchmark?
Yes, quite a bit of our loans are actually linked to repo. So the moment
right.
there's a reduction in repo, it straight away flows to our interest. But
how much of your overall loans are linked to repo as a percentage?
Close to about 55 to 60 odd percent would be
so
linked.
So three categories. There is small, which is fixed, about 20%. And the balance, let's say 20% would be linked to MCLRs.
Yes.
And the 60%, 55-60% will be linked to repos, Viraj.
Fantastic. My last question is regarding, transferring incremental properties to the GIC joint venture platform. Do you see incremental properties over the next 1 or 2 years from your upper upscale being monetized and transferred into that platform, which may ease some of the concerns that investors have had around leverage and your CapEx commitments?
So I will repeat the fact that we are not, we think we have promised near term 3 times, midterm 2.5 times net debt to EBITDA. We will get there.
Yeah.
We are seeing, with last 12 months, Viraj, we saw almost 350 odd crores of free cash. A lot of our money is invested in the Tribute in Bangalore or the W in Hyderabad or the new hotels that we've opened earlier this year or the inventory we're opening. FY27 minus the W will give us everything, and therefore they will see an exponential growth in EBITDA. First and foremost, we as a team do not see any concerns on leverage. Our investable surplus is adequate to fund everything we have committed to so far. That's number one. Number two, our transfer to the GIC asset is dependent on the value accretion and not solving a leverage problem, right?
Absolutely.
So I think for us, it's about if we can extract the right value and use it to fund future growth. Future means beyond what we have, Viraj, right?
Yes,
We will consider that. But as of today, we don't need to. I had mentioned earlier that a lot of our active pipeline is actually variable leases. And variable leases, as unachievable as it may sound, you basically secure a large asset for 10, 15 crores upfront. And then you have deferred capital expenditure over a 2.5-3 year period to finish it. So that kind of allows you to match your cash flows with capex. Right.
Sure.
And that is giving us the confidence of maintaining a certain amount of a balance sheet discipline while delivering growth. The intent of the GIC platform is to grow. We are looking at certain opportunities in that platform to grow that platform. Will we transfer an existing asset to that platform? Depends entirely on growth opportunities that we see, the value in the growth versus the value we extract from monetizing an existing asset. Nothing so far, Viraj, so I don't want to kind of lead anybody to
understand. No problem. Thank you. Last question is, if you can just guide us, Ashish, given the many moving parts around CapEx commitments, over the next 5 years, what would be the cumulative CapEx of them, maybe?
Just a second.
Is it close to about 1,000 crores?
The total CapEx before Navi Mumbai was 1,100 crores, of which part of that was to be contributed by GIC. So on our own, the total capex is about 850 crores, right? And Navi Mumbai, we need to add to that, which is the first phase, is about 650 crores. So about 1,500 crores.
1,500.
Correct, 1,500 is the total capex.
Understood. Thank you very much. All the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Rajiv Bharati from Nuvama. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good afternoon. Thanks for the opportunity. So on the Navi Mumbai asset, the cumulative capital employed without the working capital includes the 70 crores write back which you have done, is it? The 1,000 crore number?
No, it does not.
Okay. And second part is, you know, this hotel rate report which we have seen, came in October, talks about 1,500 odd rooms in Navi Mumbai. I'm not sure whether it includes your announcement as well. But what is the visibility, for example, acceleration in terms of the overall capacity which would come in the next 5 years, seeing what you are seeing otherwise?
So, Rajiv, Hotelivate and HVS and SDR are three sources. And all of those three sources are indicating about 1,500 rooms to be added. Does not include our asset. So when you add our asset, that will take it to 2,200 odd rooms. I think two things. One is, of course, we've seen only about 60% of the all announced projects ever being delivered in India. Two, we should also be prepared for more hotel development to come upon in Navi Mumbai Airport precinct. Of course, it will take its own time, but we should be mindful as investors that there will be more supply coming in at Navi Mumbai International Airport. But Rajiv, in a market like this, there's enough precedence to demonstrate that the current pace is not an indicator of what the future would be. And we had the same situation at Delhi International Airport, you know, where the overall Delhi supply on that day was about 10,000 rooms. And Delhi Airport announced auctioning plots equaling about 4,500 rooms, right? So, you know, on a high level, you thought, oh, 50% supply increase, all of that concentrated in a 2-kilometer radius. But as we've seen, Delhi Airport precinct has really done exceedingly well because it has been well supported by a massive infrastructure next to it, which is the airport, you know. I think Navi Mumbai will see a very similar transformation that I don't think we're going to stop at 1,500 rooms or 2,000 rooms. Or I think Navi Mumbai will eventually be a 5,000, 6,000 room market over the next 10, 15, 20 years. But at the same time, it will be backed by a massive 100, 110 million passenger airport. And all the data center office developments that you're seeing around it. So you would see a completely new city emerging here, much like Delhi Aerocity or Outer Ring Road, Bangalore, where there were no hotels 10 years back, really, right? So I think in newer precincts, Rajiv, sometimes taking existing supply, adding proposed supply is not the right mathematics. I know sometimes we all do it, but, you know, the whole thing is about understanding the nature and the size of demand which is being created. And unlike many other things, Rajiv, like office developments or IT parks, the only one development which guarantees demand is an airport, you know, because, you know, it's regulated. The current Bombay airport is tapped off at 45-50. The new airport is being built for 110. So I think airport brings a very high degree of assurance of how demand will be created. So we are prepared for supply, and actually when we look at our guidance of 180-odd crores, 185 crores EBITDA from this asset, when we open this, Rajiv, interestingly, it assumes that the RevPAR freezes to current levels, you know. So we are already making an assumption that the RevPAR will remain to be the same in 2030 as they are in 2025, and we are all gunning for the fact that we'll be proven miserably wrong, and the RevPAR would continue to grow at 5-6% a year. But we are making that assumption because we don't know what will happen to supply. So we need to be prepared for it.
Sure, sure. That's all from my side. Thanks a lot and all the best.
Thank you very much. The next question is from the line of Ishmahit Arora from Soik Research. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. So congrats on getting the Navi Mumbai asset in place. So the question is that in H2 of this year, we expect the ballroom renovation and the new inventory to kick in, right, which wasn't there in H1 of this financial year?
That's right. So H1, we not just, actually, if you ask me, we had no ballroom in Sheraton, Hyderabad. We had no ballroom in Hyatt Place, Gurgaon. Some inventory in Hyatt Place, Gurgaon was under renovation because of the adjacent workaround ballroom. We would have, and then the hotels that we opened in Calcutta, Greater Noida, new inventory in Bangalore, all just in the first few months. We also deliver additional rooms in Sheraton, Hyderabad. We are in November, in the next few days or two to three weeks. So quarter four, we will get a clear run for all of that new inventory in hotels, and it's also a great quarter. So what happens is that you are pretty much sold out Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday in that quarter. So as you deliver new inventory, the absorption is pretty quick, actually.
Got it, sir. That was my only question. Congrats to the entire team on getting the asset, and hopefully, basically, we deliver for the shareholders and also the stakeholders in times to come.
Thank you so much, Ishmat.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, that was the last question. I now hand over to the management for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for your time. I know we've taken a lot of your time today, but you know, it deserves it. I will repeat that I was excited about when I started SAMHI in 2011. It has taken us 14 years to get to an inflection point where the company is now producing a lot of free cash to fund its own growth. We are even more excited about the fact that we've been able to secure avenues to deploy that capital. You know, as we see that companies have different problems in different cycles, you know, we had a problem of leverage till about 2 years back. And in the last quarter, there were a lot of questions around us about growth. I think we have the free cash. We have the growth opportunities for ourselves. I couldn't be more excited about SAMHI over the next 5 to 10 years. A lot of our value creation is now in execution. So we'd like to go back to our desk and make sure we execute the promises that we've made for you. Thank you for your time, and we'll speak to you soon in January, hopefully. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. On behalf of SAMHI Hotels Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.